tuning in. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Catholic Things. We talk about that for 50 minutes every afternoon. On my Facebook page, you'll find the list of things we're discussing this afternoon. Judge Andrew Napolitano apparently not back on Fox News since this interesting report that surfaced about the wiretapping of Trump Tower seemed to be something that he propagated, maybe not that he originated, but certainly that he presented as fact, which, of course, created some even FBI investigation to get to the bottom of this. We'll talk about that. Also, Sean Spicer now with his recent claim that immigration is so out of control that now kids are being raped in high schools by illegal immigrants. Not an immigration issue. This happened, but not an immigration issue. This is a high school security issue is what it is, and we'll talk about that. Also, the balance of powers. Now the Supreme Court ruling on an Obama challenge that basically says that he overstepped his powers, and why it is important to find the balance in the balance of powers, and why it's a good thing to see this happening. And then, of course, Trump still talking about the Putin nut, Putin, who knows. We know something's going on with the Russian thing. We'll talk about all of that and more. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour, back after this. Back, I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Things. Catholic Things is what I try to say. I said Our Catholic Faith for a long time, but it's really not a faith show. I think, come on, let's be honest. I mean, I'm a Catholic guy. I try to see the world through the Catholic lens. I try to have an ethic, an ethos, as I call it, for the what my faith dictates. But we're not here talking about prayer or sacramentals or sacraments or any of that. I mean, it's just we're living life and trying to figure things out, looking through that lens and going, okay, how does this work? Yeah, we need to be connected to our faith, but I'm more concerned about how do we see things? How do we see this in a way that says this has a consistency from start to finish? Or put that consistency in a circle and say, is it all connected, right? You can look at it that way. But it's consistency, it's ethos. That's what the Catholic worldview brings, and that's what's important to me, and that's why we talk about this stuff. So, with that said, the wiretap claim that seems to be debunked now was certainly propagated on Fox News by Judge Andrew Napolitano on his program. And or at least on a segment, I'm not sure if that was his program or how it was. He was there. He was talking about it. It was him who kind of led the charge on this, which then turned into fact, gospel, according to our president, which I find interesting, shocking, surprising, disturbing, you name it, because we've got a president who will look at something that's real. Like the dossier, for instance, that was real. The fact that there was something coming from an independent British intelligence agency, yes, that said this guy's got some connections. That was real. Whether the information in it or not was fabricated, that document existed. That was reported by CNN. It was claimed to be fake news. Just dismissed. There's not even a document, right? There's no report. There's nothing that says, okay, we've investigated this. We've assembled this information. We have this to review. I think it's important to understand what we're talking about here. Let's look at this. That didn't even exist in the wiretap claim, and it's gospel. So there's obviously a bizarre disconnect, and not only a disconnect, but my goodness, a challenge here that says, This doesn't make sense. Right? I'm trying trying to find a way to explain this that could remotely be softened by not just calling it what it is, which is lunacy. I mean, this is lunacy. This is when you have that type of perspective. And believe me, I get it. I get it. It's not that I don't understand. We don't want to hear the stuff that's bad. We don't want to hear the stuff that's negative. We don't want people talking badly about us. Nobody wants that. I get that. But at the same time, you got to realize that if you're in the public eye, I mean, even doing a radio program, there are people who, believe me, just being on Facebook, just put things out there. You can experience this for yourself. Yes, you too can have this experience. You put an opinion out there, and what happens? There are those who love you for your opinions and those who hate you for your opinions. Hopefully they love you for who you are, regardless of your opinions. That's where we need to get down to that level first, but that's another conversation altogether. But if you can't accept that dynamic, which is there for us all, if we're willing to put an opinion out, then you don't need to put opinions out, first off. But in this dynamic where you've got a president who is undoubtedly going to get criticism, and he's going to get criticism from the press, no president has escaped that. None. We may not have had newspapers circulating under the Washington presidency, but you know what we did have? We had flyers and leaflets that were hand-drawn. And things that made claims of outrageous whatever against administrations from the very beginning. It's always happened. Or a town crier, right? We have media because we started with a guy standing on the street, kind of like me, making out outlandish claims, criticizing this, asking this question, or just giving information. That happened. And I assure you, in those areas, there was always, always questions about elected officials. But if you can't embrace that as part of the job and just realize it's going to be, that's how it's going to be, and if you can't have a little bit of, let's pause, let's press a pause button, let's wait before we react. I mean, this is literally elementary school type of procedure when it comes to responding. This is something we should be taught. Don't react immediately. Don't react out of anger or fear. Stop, assess, understand, responsibly reply, right? Whatever. Take that breath. Take that pause. Don't fire off a Twitter post because you think that something is what it is until you know what it is. And even then, when you know what it is, maybe watch your public persona in this dynamic until you really get to the point of true understanding. Then comment. But in this world of news, fake news, allegation, I would even say gospel, right? As I said a moment ago, gospel versus fake news. Either it's the gospel truth, there's no question about it, or it's completely discredited as fake. We as individuals have to be all the more discerning, because if all we're doing is kind of waiting for that filter to tell us what we're supposed to believe, then we've already missed the mark. We're already out of the game. We're being led. We're being led by the propaganda machine at that point, whichever propaganda machine it is, and there are plenty of them. Left and right have their agenda. Religious media has their agenda. We have an agenda, like I say. We're trying to accomplish something. I think anyone with a message generally is trying to accomplish something, even those who just do it seemingly strictly for entertainment purposes. Art is not entertainment. Please understand that. Art may be entertaining, right? But it's not entertainment. Art is a medium of a message. Please realize that. And if you've never embraced that, I think you're going to maybe see things a little bit differently. There's nothing that is pure entertainment. I'm sorry. There's a, let's put it this way. If it's meaningful, it's not pure entertainment. If it's art, I know. I'm digging a hole for myself for entertainers who, I'm trying to say, I know that there are those who may be entertaining, but really have no depth. That exists, but they're not really making the impact like the ones who are really trying to make a statement. We see performances like the Super Bowl halftime show that can be, for all accounts and purposes, on the surface, viewed and said, oh, well, that's entertaining. Okay, that's all it is. But if you know anything about what Lady Gaga was doing, you know anything about her and her perspectives and what she believes and why she would present what she presented the way she presented it, you see the message and you know what's there. And you don't have to read into it. It's not like I'm creating this because, no, you know what this artist is doing. She's an artist. Artists create for the purpose of impact to present a message in a way that says, okay, wow, there's something here. There really is something here that we had not seen prior. And maybe we need to take a closer look. That's what good art does. Media is just one of those mediums, right? Where messages are conveyed. Be discerning. That's all I'm saying. Be discerning. Be discerning in anything. Don't accept anything as gospel but the gospel, right? I think that's probably the beginning point. You know, is it from the gospel? Okay, then maybe it's gospel. Is it a gospel? Does it have a gospel name, but it didn't make it into the canon? Because it's like the Gospel of Thomas, which for some reason was left out, right? It didn't pass the muster. So there, it's an apocryphal writing, and maybe it's not to be treated as gospel. Although there could be some good stuff in there. I'm not saying don't read the Gospel of Thomas. I'm saying, is it gospel? Is it really gospel? Right? You can trust it, if that's the case. Well, let's trust that. And let's question this other stuff, because there's an agenda, no doubt. But I've shared this before, watching my mom watch Saturday Night Live with me as a kid, right? And she was like wrapped into this thinking, this is real. is that really Gerald Ford? I mean, it's a really bad impersonation from Chevy Chase. How you would assume that, I don't know. But it was funny because it was just the gullibility that happens, especially in that generation. Well, if it's on TV, it's got to be true. And we've kind of still embraced that. And I think that it's something we of course, have got to be aware of. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this. Back in Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, current events, Catholic things. We talk about that for 50 minutes every afternoon. Well, it looks like the anti-immigration rhetoric is ratcheting up all the more. Basically saying now, after this incident that took place in a high school bathroom, that it looks like this is an immigration, another issue why people need to be deported. And apparently this happened in Washington High School, and it was Rockville High School last Thursday. Two students, I'm reading from the politics section of the New York Times. It says, Thursday, two students, Jose Montano, 17, and Henry Sanchez, Million, 18, were charged the next day. Now, I guess because Jose is illegal, they can put his name in here as a 17-year-old. I don't know. I don't know how that works, because I thought you had to be an 18-year-old, at least legal adult. But immigration official says Mr. Sanchez, native of Guatemala, living in the United States illegally. So apparently what happened was these two propositioned a 14-year-old girl for sex in a hallway at Rockville High School. This is from the Montgomery County Police Department. When she refused, they forced her into a boy's bathroom, raped her in a bathroom stall, the authorities say. So, obviously, I guess, right, we could clearly say that with proper deportation measures in place, then this would all be made good. Is that what we're going to say? I mean, so I'm not saying that these two are not criminals. I'm not saying that. And I'm not saying that if someone commits a violent crime, they shouldn't be deported. But how does it prevent something of this nature from happening, right? So it's easy to look at symptoms. We do this all the time. And we say, well, there's the problem. There's the problem. We just need to fix that or fix that. Well, it's done. Get rid of illegal immigrants and there's no raping in bathrooms anymore. Really? That's how it works? Because this is clearly an immigration issue. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, they're the only ones who would ever do anything of that nature. You know, sexual assault is an unfortunate reality that's much broader. I think anyone with any remote degree of intelligence would agree that it's not limited by any stretch of the imagination to illegal immigrants. And especially in a high school setting or a college setting where this is rampant. And truly rampant. There's been criticism about that. Oh, it's not as bad. How do you want to qualify this? How do you want to say these are the parameters that would indicate this is a sexual assault? Do you want to say forcible something? Forcible something, whatever that something is. Does it have to be intercourse, or can it just be forcible advances? Is that sexual assault? Could it considered to be? I think so. If that's the case, look at any college campus, especially college campus, but I've seen it in high school as well, where there are people, young people, with their inhibitions lowered, right? Through substances. Alcohol will lower your resistance to whatever, and you will be much less inhibited. Look, when we were in high school, please understand, and this was 30-some-odd years ago, between 30 and 34, 5 years ago, we would make a concoction that we called hooch that was designed to be as potent as it possibly could be and as tasty as it possibly could be. And you know what our nickname for it was? Liquid Panty Remover. That's what we called it in high school, right? We would have these parties. We would mix up coolers of this hooch with pure grain alcohol and tropical punch Kool-Aid with all kinds of fruit and as tasty as it possibly could be, knowing a couple of those and anything goes. We called it Liquid Panty Remover. So that wasn't because I was hanging out with illegal immigrants, right? That wasn't because all of my friends somehow sneaked across the border and gave me the recipe. We were kids. We were suburban kids, essentially. I was a country kid that lived like a suburban kid and hung out with the suburbanites and did all the suburban country club stuff that all of my friends did, that I just entered into that world even though I was a country boy. But this is what we did. We had these parties at people's homes, when parents were out of town. at in fields, right, with bonfires on someone's property that illegally allowed us, essentially, I guess, a place to party. I mean, there was a, I remember there was a guy. I don't know who the guy was. He had a big, big field. And his field backed up to a lake. And he used to charge us in high school, I don't know, $1 a head, $5 a car, something of that nature. I think it was $1 if you're by yourself, if you had more than five in your car, it was a bargain. So we would load up the cars and try to get into this place and pay $5 to get in. And he would let us party on his property. And it was back. You had to drive back. And, you know, you couldn't see it from the road. You couldn't even see the bonfires. We'd have bonfires back there. You couldn't even see those from the road. And it was just a party of debauchery with high schoolers. But I tell you what, all kinds of things went on at those parties. But one thing I know was never there, an illegal immigrant. Never. There were kids driving their parents' Mercedes back on a farm to go party at a bonfire and drink hooch and smoke weed with all kinds of things going on. But there were never any illegal immigrants there. I assure you of that. It wasn't even a thing. So to try to blame high school stuff, which is egregious, but there's been egregious activity in high schools for as long as there's been high schools. To blame that on illegal immigrants, that is the most disingenuous bunch of garbage ever. And we need to see through that. Now, am I saying, again, if these kids are proven guilty, as it appears they are, does that mean we sweep it under the rug and call it a sanctuary high school and everything's fine? No, I'm not saying that. Call a crime, realize what it is. But at the same time, get to the bottom of the problem. Don't call it something that it isn't. And my contention is, we look at this from a standpoint of saying, how do we ensure nothing of this nature ever happens in a high school? What do you do? How do you have the assurance of that? First off, is it a big deal to have extra staff posted at bathrooms? We had a situation where a teacher was killed in a bathroom a few years ago. Could that have been solved if there was never an opportunity for someone to walk in there? I mean, it's a private place. I'm not saying check the gender before somebody walks in. I'm not saying that. I'm simply saying let's make sure that suspicious activity is not going to happen. Or at least let's try to stem it as much as we can. And something of that nature, to have just a bathroom monitor, somebody at the door. I'm sorry, no, you're not going to go in here. Not going to follow this girl in here. No, not going to happen. Just one person at that doorway in these two situations would have resolved this. Generally, crimes are crimes of opportunity. It's because we have left the door open, literally, in this case. That doesn't have to be an immigrant. It doesn't have to be even a high school kid. Right? I mean, teachers do egregious things as well, unfortunately. But if you got at least someone who is not complicit, and in these situations, even where there's high school students and teachers, it's usually not a complicit ring of something. It's a relationship that's occurred, that's happened. Just that one person, that could be all it takes. Is that a difficult policy to enact, to try? Yeah, no, it's not the most glamorous job to stand there at a bathroom. But could we put a private security firm in there and have some monitors, not only at the entrance doors checking to make sure nobody's bringing anything in, but also to make sure they're not doing things within the school? Could that be a solution? We got to stop looking at symptoms and assuming that those are the problems. We got to get down to the problems and say, how do we keep this from happening? And especially when we label individuals in the process, bad news. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this. Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Catholic Things, 50 minutes every afternoon. It's good when you have a Supreme Court that acts like a Supreme Court, which I guess, I don't know if there's a time when the Supreme Court hasn't acted like a Supreme Court. I think there's criticism of certain rulings like the Roe v. Wade ruling. But again, trying to look at the constitutionality of what this decision was. I'm going to talk about that, and I'm going to talk about what I was going to talk about. So, because I got stuck on this one, so let's get on to this one, because there's been a discussion about this, especially with Gorsuch now walking through his confirmation hearing, and it appears as though the Democrats have heard what they needed to hear on the situation of Roe v. Wade, because what did Gorsuch say? He did not say, I can't wait to get on the bench so I can overturn Roe v. Wade. He didn't say that. And there's been a lot of, well, is he really a Scalia pro-life guy or a Scalia conservative guy, whatever? Or is he just one of those constitutionalists? I don't know. I'm making stuff up. But, okay, first, we want our justices to be constitutionalists. Understand that. Because that's their job. They're there to look at the Constitution and say, what does this say? What does this Constitution actually say? And if it says this, well, what does that mean? And what does this actually mean in light of this situation? So that's one thing. Gorsuch, talking about Roe v. Wade, says it's established precedent. What does that mean? It means it's been on the books for a long time. It's established. There have been some lower court decisions that possibly could have challenged the Roe v. Wade precedent, but it hasn't been challenged. It hasn't been challenged enough to make it an issue, to threaten it. And the other thing I think it's important to point out, and I hope that people get this, but I have to assume that maybe not. I mean, I can only assume that it really isn't understood. A Supreme Court does not get together in a huddle and go, okay, let's go back. Okay, so where was that one decision back in 73? Yeah, let's get rid of that one today. Okay, today we're going to get rid of the Roe v. Wade. Okay, what was the one we really hated? What was that? That happened back in. They don't do that. That's not how the Supreme Court works. You don't huddle up and decide we're going to do this. Now, there is a vote on the lower court decisions. Yes, they do that. They decide whether they're going to hear the case and perhaps rule on the Supreme Court level on the lower court to potentially change it, or they're going to let that one stay. That happens. If it's a lower court decision, the Supreme Court doesn't hear it, guess what? The lower court, the district court, keeps the ruling, and it is the precedent at that point. So we got to understand a couple of things. One is Gorsuch could be as a hater of Roe v. Wade as the day is long. He could be the most rabid pro-life Catholic on the face of the earth, and it doesn't matter when he gets on the court. That's not going to change. He's not going to do anything until there's a challenge from a lower court that could then potentially make this an issue. Right? Should that happen, now we get an issue. Or, now we'll say that. Now, there's another way around it, because this is what we're seeing the court doing right now. They're looking at an executive action and asking, is this constitutional? Can a president actually just appoint who the heck ever he wants, or does there need to be some sort of Senate appropriation? Do we need a confirmation hearing on these positions? Because that's kind of what the Constitution would suggest. It can't just be appointed. That's happened. Now, that was because Congress asked the question, not because it went to court. But the reason why they can do that is because we are in the balance of powers, known as the executive, the judicial, and the legislative branches of Congress, of government, right? Congress, legislative, House and Senate, judicial, Supreme Court, executive, president. Those are the three. And there has to be a check and balance within that. The president essentially makes the appointments to the Supreme Court, so he's picking who goes. The legislative branch making laws that could potentially get challenged. And if they get challenged as being unconstitutional, they could go to the Supreme Court. The president doing executive things, which this is at least the third time a presidential executive action under the Obama administration went to the Supreme Court for challenge. And in the first one, it was upheld, the mandate, which came from the executive order, essentially, and the health care mandate, through the legislation, no doubt of the Affordable Care Act being passed, but that one was upheld. The other time of amnesty for the illegal immigrants that tried to be executive ordered, which was challenged, that one was struck down by the Supreme Court. And the same is true with this one when it comes to cabinet appointees that need to have some sort of confirmation. So it's cool that we have this check and balance and this is in place. But what they cannot do, and I think it's so important to understand, the court cannot just go back and go, yeah, we really hated that. Yeah, man, those idiots back in the 70s, what were they thinking? Let's fix that one. Let's do that one today. Yeah, and then let's go back on that one. They're not going to do that. Now, one of three things could happen. A lower court decision based on a state a piece of state legislation. Something gets enacted on a state level. And somebody hates it because it looks like it's unconstitutional, because it would prevent women from having access to make the decision for abortion, right? Not access necessarily, but they can no longer, it's illegal to make, to even choose. Let's say that happens. There will be those who will challenge that. Once that's challenged, it will go to court. And if the local courts rule a certain way, if the district courts rule a certain way, and there's not enough of a decision satisfactory to the original plaintiff, then that could potentially go to the Supreme Court, especially if it's constitutionality, which is questioned, of course. Could potentially go, because then the court still has to decide to hear it. So in the case of Roe v. Wade, in order for it to be overturned, that's one path. And that means a state legislature, state legislature needs to get some sort of legislation in place that would potentially be constitutionally challenged. That's a strategy that a state could play if they have enough pro-lifers in their assembly to make that happen. They could do that. They could strategically say, okay, let's pass this knowing that it is going to go challenged because it appears to be a threat to the 14th Amendment, which is where Roe v. Wade was hinged. Should they do that? Now they're on course to potentially change the direction on Roe v. Wade. But the Supreme Court can't do that until it gets to them. Now, the other thing that could happen is federal legislation. Federal legislation that would pass through and appear to be so sweeping and challenging that now there's a court order that says, wait a minute, we got to do something against that. Should that happen, now there's potential for the to go to the Supreme Court. And the other potential would be that an executive order from the president says no more access to abortion, at which point Congress could say, wait a minute, you just overstepped your boundaries. This needs to be decided by the Supreme Court. So any of these potential scenarios all could dismantle. Any one of them could potentially dismantle Roe v. Wade. What will not happen is, let's say that over the next 3-4 years, whatever it is, of Trump presidency, or let's say it goes 8 years, he gets to replace the entire bench of those that would potentially be unfriendly to his conservative, quote-unquote, perspectives. You got a court, you got 9 Scalia clones at that point, let's say. They can still do nothing, right? They can do nothing without something to challenge it. So if a president wanted to gamble and he was really pro-life, he could executive order something that's going to get challenged, and the constitutionality of that executive order could go to the Supreme Court. That's a strategy that he could play if he really wanted to do that. So at this point, I just don't see that happening. I don't see any of those happening. I don't see that there's enough traction on a state level for it to even go to a challenge. I don't think this president is going to do anything executively that is going to go challenge to the Supreme Court that could potentially dismantle Roe v. Wade. And I'm really not sure. I'm not necessarily hopeful of any of that. So it's what I've said all along. You know, stack the court all you want. It's not important enough. At this point, it doesn't seem important enough on the other levels. More to come will be, oh no, we're done. That's it. Thank you for listening. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.